Hey, welcome back to the podcast. Christian Yordanov here. Today, I have a special guest. It's one of my clients, Lauren. Lauren, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. And I always appreciate when folks can share some of their health journey, their previous experiences, so other parents and other women can learn from them and make better decisions for their health and their children's health, mm-hmm. right? So right. I think let's start with, just to give the folks listening to us a little bit of context, can we maybe start with, where did your health journey begin?
Okay. Well, it began when I was trying to become a mom and I did not realize how challenging that can be. You know, sometimes you think that you're going to go into motherhood and it's just going to happen so easy. And there's not going to be issues. You're like, oh, I want to be a mom now. And it's just going to happen. But for most of my 20s, I was positive. I was like, I just want to do my thing. I'm not ready to be a mom. I'll be a mom when I want to later on. And so it was around the time when I was about 29. I was like, okay, I think I'm ready to start and start motherhood. And I had been on birth control for about 10 years or so straight and had zero idea that birth control was horrible for me. You know, most women don't. They just think, oh, this is good. It just will keep us from having unwanted pregnancies and all this other stuff. But it's just horrible. So I got off in October and then immediately got pregnant in November, found out I was pregnant. And I was so excited because, you know, you never know how long it's going to take. And that was one of my fears. Like, I think every woman kind of has a fear they're going to have a long time.
Yeah.
And so in December, we told our family, like for Christmas, that there was going to be a baby in August. And we had like cute little ways of revealing it. I was so excited. I mean, the moment you see a positive pregnancy test, you just start thinking about your future. You know, you just start thinking about all the events of this child. And so I went to my 8-week appointment for the ultrasound. And when I went there, there was no heartbeat. And like, that's not the reaction you want to get when you're in there and they pull it up on the screen and they can't find a heartbeat. And they were like, okay, come back in a week and we'll check. And I just felt this gut feeling that something was wrong. And I just knew something was wrong. And so I ended up having to go to the ER before I even could make the next appointment because I just started bleeding and knew that a miscarriage was happening. And so I went to the ER and they confirmed, they were like, yep, you are having a miscarriage and you're going to need to follow up with your OB. And so that was really depressing. And I remember going back to my OB and she sat down with me and like gave me the talk and gave me some options. She was like, you can either take a pill to speed this up, which I didn't want to do. I didn't want to have any part of the miscarriage. I was like, if it's going to happen, my body's just going to do it. I'm not going to take a pill to make it happen. And so then it happened, but my OB was like, you're not going to have another one. One in four women have one. Very unlikely to have another one. So I just kept doing my regular thing. I didn't make any health changes at that time. I just thought, okay, I'll try again because I thought it was just a fluke. But then tried again a month or two later, got pregnant immediately. Another miscarriage. But this time we did see the heartbeat. So at that point, I was like, there's something wrong with my body. Something is off. Something needs to be fixed. We even did a miscarriage kit. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but if you have like what happens when you have a miscarriage and you send it in, they can test it and see if there's like chromosomal abnormalities, you know, if there's issues with the baby or if it's the mom. And it came back and it said there were no issues, completely normal, female. Like it told me the gender, which was like daggers in my heart, just knowing. But then I knew, I was like, okay, there was nothing wrong. It's me. So at that point, I'm like, something's got to change. And I started ordering books on the subject of miscarriages and like having a healthy pregnancy. I went to a naturopathic physician and he tested me on everything, found out that my thyroid was not optimal, sluggish, low progesterone. I have the MTHFR gene mutation, which that led me down a path of just reading about that, which how it's connected to miscarriages and pregnancy issues. And so it just kind of like opened my my eyes to all these other things I hadn't even considered, you know? And around the time was COVID was happening. So that was also an awakening and another way of just starting to question things and start realizing that all these things that I had been taught growing up were not what they were, you know? And so they just kind of made me go down the path of seeking truth and like what was good for my body and how to become a healthier person in every way. Because when I first went into motherhood to become pregnant the first time, I was just unhealthy in every way possible. Like when I think about it, it wasn't just physically or, you know, nutritionally, I was mentally and emotionally and socially, it's like unhealthy, every aspect really. And so, when I started cutting things out, like gluten, dairy, started eating at home, cutting out the processed food, looking at ingredients of everything that I ate, everything that goes into my body, the products I use on my skin. I mean, I became very extreme in every route. Like every little detail had to be perfect. You know, I had to get new pots and pans. I had to get new sheets for my bed.
Welcome to orthorexia.
Yeah, and I drove my husband crazy, you know, and like I wanted to wear gloves to the store so I didn't touch the receipts, you know.
No, it was that I approve of.
Yes, and I told, and Patrick's like, you're gonna look crazy, and I'm like, well, yeah, well, you know. But so I did all the things and was very strict. Cut out alcohol. That's another thing. I used to drink wine every night, glasses on glasses of wine. And so, but I was just very serious about it. I was willing to do everything I possibly could so that I could have a healthy baby because that's all that mattered to me. You know, I was going to exhaust my resources, started getting acupuncture. I was reading about other women's journeys and what they did. And a lot of them talked about their diet. You know, they started eating cleaner. So many things. And so after I did all those things for several months, I went back to that doctor. He tested me. My test scores were so much better. My inflammation was down. My thyroid was functioning better. My progesterone was higher. And he gave me the green light. He's like, okay, you're good. You're going to have a healthy pregnancy now.
How many months was that?
So that from when I first saw him, I think it was about 4 months. Okay. 4 months, I was like on a strict regimen.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And I just, like, I took it very seriously. Like, I didn't have any sort of sugar at all. Like, maybe some like berries, but that was it. Like nothing sweet, no sugar or anything. And that's hard for me because I have a sweet tooth.
Yeah.
But I was just so serious, like, because I didn't want to go back to him and him tell me, no, you need to wait longer.
Yeah.
And so thankfully, the next time I tried my third pregnancy, it's, you know, it started progressing better. I mean, I was still very scared to go back to the doctor and, you know, have your ultrasound because the first two, you know, it's like kind of traumatic because you remember the last two went a certain way. And so the third time you go and you're like,
absolutely.
Is it, you know, it's going to progress. And I had little scares during that pregnancy. And I feel like it was really hard not to be paranoid about stuff because I was trying so hard to just avoid every little toxic thing I possibly could, which now I know I can only control so much and I can't let it consume me where I feel insane because that's not healthy. Mm-hmm. I just try to make better decisions. But ever since then, I mean, I am not the same person. Like it changed me so much to where I think I know I'm a better mom now. I wouldn't have been as good of a mom had I just gotten pregnant the first time because I was totally different. I didn't look at the world the way I do now. I didn't look at food the way I do now, you know, I didn't look at health. And so I feel like I have all this knowledge now that I'm just a better person and a better mom for it. And so that experience really shaped me. And I always thought when I was going through it, when I was cutting out all the stuff in my mind, I was like, this is temporary. As soon as I get pregnant, I'm going back the way I was, right? That's what I was thinking. Yeah. I thought, I'm just going to do it so I can get pregnant. I'm going to go back to having my whole milk lattes in the morning. And I'm going to go back to having pizza every week, all those things.
Yeah.
But then I had her. I gave birth to her. And I was like, no, I didn't feel right. And I was like, I'm just going to continue it as I'm breastfeeding. Like, I just was just nervous. And now it's been 4 years of living this way. And I'm thinking, I'm never going to go back to that because I don't want to.
Yeah.
I don't want to go back to living like that. It's like my desires have changed. I don't want to eat those sort of things anymore. I don't want to eat garbage, you know?
You crave better foods. Once you get healthy, you just crave doing things which are conducive to either maintaining or improving your health. Even like sleep, I think, especially in our 20s, we disregard sleep. Oh, you know, okay, I'll go to bed at 2. I got to wake up at 8 and I can't sleep for an hour, but 5 hours is going to be fine. And now in our 30s, so it's such a big priority, isn't it?
And 30s are just better. 30s are just way, everyone told me 30s would be better. But in my 20s, I was so scared about getting older. I was like, oh, I don't want to get older, you know? And now I'm like, 30s are so much better. 20s were a mess. I was a mess in my 20s. It's an idiot. Yeah,
absolutely. I think if we continue to maintain our health and our body and all that good stuff, I think things should get better as we age. I really do. Because you give a crap less about what other people think, what society expects of you, and you're more comfortable in your where you're going with your life. So it's great. It's great to be able to be in that position.
It really is. So true. I like myself better now than I did before. Yeah. You know, I actually like who I am now. Before, I was just like, you are a mess, girl. Get it together. You know?
Yeah. So do you want to share any of the stresses during the pregnancy?
Yeah. So during the pregnancy, obviously, I was always so scared that I would see any blood at any point, terrified of that. It was so hard not to freak out about stuff. I remember going to the dentist because they tell you got to get, you know, go to the dentist while you're pregnant. And I made sure, don't use fluoride. Do not. And I was like, they probably thought I was so crazy because, you know, they give you paperwork to fill out and I'm like writing notes all over it. Like, I don't want this. Because they want to do x-rays too. And I said, absolutely not. You're not doing x-rays. And they were like, it's just in your mouth. And I was like, I don't care. I am pregnant and I don't want any x-rays near me. But it's just every little thing I was so nervous about, carrying anything that was too heavy, I was so scared about. It was so hard to relax. I really felt like I was holding my breath. I really did. And I just kept thinking, I can't, like, as soon as she gets here and she's in my arms and I know that she's here, I just got everything, like, but now I know that there's new worries, you know. I'm so thankful to be a mom, but I realized you're always going to worry, you know. I thought that as soon as she was out of my body, I would no longer feel as worried, but that never goes away. There's just new worries, you know, except now I have the blessing of being a mom, you know. But other things during pregnancy that were hard was just, you know, anytime you'd get a weird little symptom or if you didn't feel enough movement or if, you know, they say don't sleep on your back, right? When you're pregnant at a certain point. There are times I'd wake up and I'd be on my back and I would be so panicked, like, oh no, I'm on my back, you know, like you don't want to do anything wrong. I didn't want to do anything wrong. Oh gosh, I remember I hated it when I'd be outside and I'd walk by someone who's smoking. I would be so disgusted because I'm like, if I just inhaled your smoke, I'm growing this life inside of me. You know, like every little detail is just, it was a lot. And then I would look at other women and it's like they didn't have a worry in their mind. You know what I mean? It was just a guaranteed thing to them. And I just thought that must be nice to just be pregnant and not feel scared or worried or terrified that something bad's going to happen. You know, just to be chill. But then they were also like eating garbage and it was so hard not to judge them because I'm like, what are you putting into your mouth? You're growing a baby. And they'll say, oh, my baby really wants this. I'm like, no, you're done. Your baby does not want that. Your baby does not want a McDonald's cheeseburger. Like you're craving that. But, and that was the other thing. A lot of times people would ask me.
It has vitamin M. It's craving, my baby's craving vitamin R. In the McDonald's cheeseburger.
Yeah, sometimes they'll say, oh, the baby's really craving this. And it's like garbage. And so people would ask me, oh, what are you craving? And I'm like, it really doesn't matter because I don't eat my cravings. Like I don't eat that way anymore. So like I never just, I don't know. A lot of times I think women give that as an excuse to kind of splurge when they're pregnant. Cause they're like, I'm growing a baby. I want this. But to me, I kept thinking everything that goes in my body, my baby is absorbing my baby. It's like feeding my baby. Like these nutrients are so important.
Yeah.
Oh, the other thing is, so I had to take baby aspirin every day. And I was really nervous about that at the time just because, you know, it's not natural. And in my mind, I was trying to be so natural. And so for some reason, that was hard for me to do. I was just nervous about it. I mean, I took it every day because I guess when you have several miscarriages, it's a preventive way just for the possible clotting. It like helps with that. But yeah, I feel like I kind of calmed down a little bit in the third trimester and didn't feel as scared just because I felt like I was almost to the finish line. You know, I kept having little milestones that I would try to get to and check off, you know. But it was a scary time. It's just you're vulnerable, you know. You want something so bad.
Yeah, you did a hospital birth, right?
Yes, I did. And my goal going into it was for it to be unmedicated. And I didn't want to take anything. I didn't know if I was going to be strong enough to do it. Because, you know, you say one thing and then when you're in the moment, you don't know if you're actually going to do it.
Yeah.
And so I stayed at home and labored the most, like the whole time there. I had a doula, which I think was really helpful just to have that like extra assistance and someone that will like help you remind you like, this is what you want. You can do it, you know, instead of relying just on your husband to kind of, to do all that. Nothing against men.
Yeah.
But I had my contractions at home. It wasn't a long labor. I think I was in labor like 8 hours total, but I made sure to stay at the house as long as possible because I knew the moment I got to the hospital, if I was in pain for too long there, I may have given in, you know, to an epidural or something. Just because you get to a certain point where you're like, I can't take the pain anymore. But by the time we got to the hospital, they had to rush me into a delivery room right away. Like there was no time for vitals. There was no time for anything. I couldn't fill out paperwork because she was coming. Like it was, they were like, they said if you had waited like 5 minutes, she would have been born in the car.
Wow.
So I had really waited to the very end, which I'm thankful I did because I think it was really helpful in having an unmedicated birth because the longer you're at the hospital just waiting, I think you're more likely to give in to something, like, you know, medication wise. But that was a very empowering moment for me because I didn't know if I was going to be strong enough to do it. I was scared. And once I did it, I was so proud of myself. The fact that I had given birth with no drugs in my body, nothing. Yeah. You know, and after she was out, she was born. I remember the nurse saying, oh, here, you want some Tylenol for your cramps? And I'm like, without any medication, now you think I want to take medication? I'm good. She's like, are you sure? I'm like, just take it away, please.
Wow.
I don't want it.
Amazing.
But my goal for my next one is to have a home birth or go to a birthing center.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I know that I can do it, that I can do it without any medication.
Yeah.
But that was just very empowering. I don't know. I was really proud of myself to do that, you know?
Yeah.
But it was a good birth. It was, thankfully, because that's also scary because, you know, anything can happen really.
Absolutely. Someone contacted me on Instagram that listens to my children's health podcast and they shared a podcast that's all about sort of free birthing and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that is next level. These women, we actually have one friend where she didn't even hire a midwife for her home birth. She had a doula that she was working with, who's the same doula that we were working with. And the doula didn't even make it to the birth. Basically, she called her, it's time. And then the doula's like, oh, okay, I'm on my way. And she got to our friend's house and she already had the baby.
So, oh my God.
It's just That's a testament crazy. To, I mean, how it's else amazing. Would women have been doing this?
That's true.
Even 300 years ago. So I think we are a little bit brainwashed, basically, that we need to go to a big old hospital and have all these procedures done.
It's
and all
so these true. It's really true. I mean, it's absolutely true. They do put that fear into like, you have to be at a hospital, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's natural. You're supposed to just be able to have your baby. You know, I know there are complications that arise and stuff, but.
So the birth was done. How did things unfold for you after that?
It was good. I mean, it's nervous, you know. I'm sure you felt the same way. The moment you have your baby, you're like, now what? What do I do? Like this fragile thing in my hands, you know. And breastfeeding was a very important thing to me, and that was another thing I was nervous about. Like, what if I can't breastfeed? Because in my mind, I was like, I have to breastfeed. And And thankfully, you know, I was able to do that for a long time. But, you know, everything was fine at the hospital, really, except I remember, you'll laugh at this, actually. This just came back to me. Being at the hospital is very just distrusting, very distrusting of everyone around me. I didn't want to close my eyes for a second because I was just like, what are they going to do? You know, I had my birth plan all printed up. I had several copies to make sure that they didn't do any of the things I didn't want, like do not bathe my baby, do not take my baby away, do not do this.
Don't look at my baby.
In bold, like so many things. So I was, I remember that after she was born, I was holding on to her. And she was like nursing on me, my baby. And I remember asking the nurse, when I fall asleep, you're not going to come in here and give her the hepatitis B shot, right? Because I don't want that. Like, I want to make sure you're not going to do that when I'm asleep. She's like, oh, no, we would never. I'm like, okay, just making sure that you're not going to try to give her any shots while I'm asleep. That was one thing I was nervous about, that they would like try to sneak in. It was also probably my postpartum anxiety, you know? I was so anxious that I just felt this overall need to protect her every little second, you know, I didn't want her to have any shots. And so
of course,
I was just like, don't try to give her a shot when I'm sleeping. But
yeah, because you're in a foreign environment. So
yes.
When we were at home, because we did a home birth, my wife, she was exhausted. It was like a 17-hour labor and all that stuff. And it was really pretty damn traumatic on her. But at least after our daughter was born, she was, you know, she went to bed and whatever, and she was with her little baby. There wasn't a need to be vigilant who's around us, because it's just our dog and the midwife.
That's
and
nice.
the doula
so
went
nice.
Home and yeah,
that's so, what I want, because it was very annoying with the lights bright. Everyone, so many nurses would keep coming in. This one nurse I couldn't stand because she was making me feel like I needed to start giving her formula. And yeah, I really did not like her, and I couldn't wait for her time to change. You know, they have staff changes, but she would come in and start saying, you might want to consider giving her formula. And I'm like, I just gave birth a few hours ago. What are you talking about? You know? And she came in with like a little pump, like trying to tell me I need to start pumping. And she just was the worst, because so many women think that their milk is supposed to come in day one. And that's not true. Like, the baby just needs the colostrum. You know, their stomachs are so small, though, all they need is the colostrum in the first day or two or whatever.
Yeah.
But a lot of women are pushed into giving them formula at the hospital because they get scared, you know, like, oh, my baby's hungry and I don't have any milk, so I'm going to give them formula. But so that was really frustrating to me, because she like put this fear in me, like, oh, what if my milk doesn't come in? But I didn't give her any. But I was happy to go home.
Behavior. Yeah.
Yeah. I was really happy to go home, because I don't like being at hospitals. They depress me. It's just the environment. It's just not for me. I don't enjoy it. So it was nice finally just being home with her and not having a bunch of strangers like in my face.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was, I don't really have any big issues or complaints that happened at the hospital. Like, besides that, like, everything was fine for the most part.
Right.
But I don't want to go back. That's for sure.
Oh yeah. I mean, like, side story. The day before my wife went into labor, they make you go to the hospital to do other bullshit scans and whatever. And it was hot COVID stuff, so everyone had to wear masks.
Oh,
I couldn't go in and accompany her. So she went in, and it's so horrible here in these hospitals. They make you, like, they're so rude, and they tell you, go there. You have to fill out a form. So they made her, like, walk up and down, like, to departments to fill out forms. And she just called me crying. I went back. And the whole time, I was telling her the day before, we don't need to go to this. We're doing a home birth. Like, these are nonsense. I'm just kind of, you know, like,
so
doing
true,
my spiel,
yeah.
You know. None of this matters. These scans are stupid and whatever else. And then, at least in hindsight, she went through it, and now she understands that it's all of that is worthless. It's just needless bureaucracy, needless procedures just to charge insurance and other stuff.
So true.
Yeah.
And just like, for instance, I don't know, I'm sure you've heard of this. I don't know where I heard this from, but apparently the hospitals make money off of selling the placenta that you leave behind. Did you know that? And now that I know that, I'm so mad that I left mine behind. I wish I would have taken it with me. Like,
Yeah.
You know, they apparently can, they sell it off and can make tons of money from it.
Yeah, yeah. That's why giving blood is really is another thing that they, a lot of that blood is being sold for experimentation, for
pharma companies
are buying it. So
exactly. I do have regrets of not even, I didn't even look at the placenta after she's born, and I regret that. I wish I didn't even think about it. I wish I would have looked at it. I wish I would have taken it home with me. I know some people are like, well, what would you have done with it at home? But I've seen that some women or people, they plant it in their garden. Like, you know, there's beautiful things that you can do with it. I mean, it held life for so long. I feel kind of guilty that it was just discarded so easily.
I made a tincture from the placenta, a piece of placenta, and another tincture from the cord.
Oh, that's so cool.
You can make homeopathics from that. And
that's,
to be
awesome,
honest, we still haven't actually used it, but I will probably do that now because at the moment my daughter has something like a histamine thing. Like, I don't know, she's scratching a lot. So maybe that's what the doula said. She's into homeopathics. Mm-hmm. She said you can dilute it like 200 times, that kind of way. And anytime she's sick or the mother is sick, you can actually give them that. It actually bolsters their. Yeah, yeah. And I'm not even sure if I'm allowed to say this, but my wife actually ate the placenta.
No, they do that here. Yeah. They can capsulize it and take
We chopped it up into like
it's
an
like
ice
a
cube
Game
tray.
Of Thrones.
Yeah, she was hating it. I had to put jam on it and honey.
She said it tasted gross.
Yeah, she was just a bit repulsed by it. But
I'm sure those nutrients were very beneficial. Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Because she kind of, we were eating a lot of liver before she got pregnant, then she couldn't stomach liver.
I can't either. I tried something about the texture, it really makes me want to puke. Like, I have such an aversion to it. Patrick and I both tried to make it. Like, he's such a good cook. He seasoned it up well. It was something about the texture. It just felt like I was chewing a tongue. It just, I've got to figure out another way to eat it because it was like really hard to eat. It was like making me sick. Honestly, I'm like, but it's so good for me. It's making me nauseous. Yeah.
We work on that. So let's fast forward. So we started working together about a year ago. You were having some issues with your daughter's bowel movements, constipation. And I think before that, about 3 or 4 months before that, before we started working together, you had a trip to the emergency room,
yes.
I think so, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. So, yeah, that was really scary. So Harlow, she was about a year and a half or so, and she had gotten really sick. I mean, it just happened so quickly. It was the day of, she had a fever. I was monitoring her. She was sleeping a lot. Her fever wasn't even that high. My mom was here. My mom was with her, and I went to the store. The store is like 2 minutes away. And while I was at the store, my husband calls me, and he's freaking out and telling me I need to get home immediately, which is terrifying for me because I'm like, what's going on? So I rush home. And I didn't witness it happen, but she had had a febrile seizure with my mom where she, I guess, you know, the fever spiked really quickly and she just went out and like flailed back and her eyes rolled back. And so we didn't know what it was. We didn't know it was a febrile seizure. So we're all freaking out and we literally, I grab her and Patrick drives us to the hospital and I'm sitting in the back with her. Like, I didn't put her in the car seat or anything. I had to hold on to her because I was so terrified.
She was conscious then, right?
She was breathing, but she was out. Like, just out. You know what I mean? She was sleeping. Like, it seemed like she was sleeping, but I didn't know that she was sleeping. I just knew she was breathing, but she was like not herself. She was out. And so we get to the hospital and I'm in a panic and I don't know what's going on. And they, you know, rush us into a room and they get her on IV, but she was so out of it that she like didn't respond to getting an IV or having all these people poking at her. And that's just like not like a normal toddler. They would be freaking out and crying. Like, she was just out of it. And so it was really terrifying because I had no idea what this was. And of course, all of a sudden, the doctor is just asking me, has she had all of her vaccinations? And I said, she's had, you know, some, like, I just told her that because I have seen parents in parent groups talk about how if you tell in hospital that you don't vaccinate, they can call like child protective services on you, or they can, like, it's really scary. And so I was terrified of that. So I told them, yeah, she's had some, because I was so scared in the moment. And then my husband comes over and he's like, no, she hasn't had any. And I'm like, you know, so scared because I don't want to have that conversation with them, because at this moment, even though I'm very confident in my choice, I was so scared for my daughter and what was going on. And I didn't, the last thing I needed was a doctor to scold me about something I made a decision on from being informed. And so, you know, he grilled into me and was all like, oh, how could you not do that? You really should have done that. Why didn't you give her, like, acting like I was negligent, basically. Yeah. And I just didn't have the energy to get into argument with him about it. But from that moment, the whole time we were there, they just kept bringing up the vaccines as if that's why we were there. If that's why this happened, because she hasn't had her vaccines and blah, 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 all that stuff. And I was just about to lose it, because every new person would say, oh, I see she hasn't had all of her vaccines. And I'm like, that's not why we're here. Like, that Jesus has nothing Christ. To do with this, you know? Yeah. It's insane the way they pester you about it, or like berate you about it, really. I mean, we have a religious exemption now, so that if we ever go back to the hospital, I can say I have legal paperwork that says she is legally exempt from it. Like, don't give me a hard time about this. But anyway, so they confirmed that it was just a febrile seizure. There was nothing other thing that happened, really. It was just that her fever spiked too fast. Like, she was fine. After a few hours, she was back to normal, talking and happy. But I was terrified, because I was like, how do I avoid this from ever happening again? Because it's really scary. And I didn't really even know where to begin, because I didn't want to start giving her medication for her fever, because I know that when the body has a fever, it's for a reason. It's to fight an infection. And when you suppress that, like, you're not really helping your immune system, you know? So I was torn with that, because, you know, I'm sure other parents would say, well, you better start, you know, giving her medication right away. But in the long run, like, are you really helping your child with that, you know?
Exactly.
So after that happened in December, another one happened in February. And I witnessed that one, and it was really terrifying. We were at home together, and she once again had a fever. I was holding her on the couch, and all of a sudden she made this noise and like did this thing with her body. And I just looked in her eyes, and like, you can just tell when they're like fading out, and it's horrifying. Jeez. And her eyes roll back, and I'm like trying to figure out what to do in this moment, you know? And she like immediately like threw up, and I like screamed for my husband to come in. And at this point, I had read up about febrile seizures, about what to do when it happens. So I was a little bit more prepared. So I, you know, made sure to hold her up in, you know, upright position on her side. And I was just trying to like hold her so she couldn't like flail around and like bite her tongue or hurt her head or anything. Mm-hmm. It didn't last long, thankfully. It was only maybe like 10 seconds. And then she was just out of it, like sleeping. And that's normal. Whenever there's a febrile seizure, they just are so exhausted, they just sleep. Right. And so now that I knew that, I just let her sleep on me, and I started giving her like droppers of coconut water, because I was really worried about her being dehydrated.
Yeah.
And so I was just giving her that while she was sleeping. And then literally later that night, she was fine. It just totally fine. And so that after that, I was like, I need to find someone to help me. I don't want to experience this anymore. And so I was, you know, trying to do some research. And one day I was listening to an episode of Tim Foyle podcast, right? And you were on, and it was perfect timing, because that in that moment, I was so stressed out about the situation. And I was like, I don't even know where to begin. I don't know who to find to help me, how to help her. Because number one, she also had the constipation issues too. So it was the febrile seizures and then the constipation. And so when I heard you on the episode, I was like, this feels like a sign. He knows what he's talking about. This is his forte. But I had no idea that you were taking clients or that you actually help people. I wasn't sure. And so I go to look at your website, and I see that you're doing calls, and it just felt like it was meant to be, you know, like it was put in my path. Like, this is what I needed. Yeah. And we had our call, and I felt really good about it. And since working with you, you know, those issues have improved, you know, drastically, you know. Harlow's doing a lot better with the constipation. You know, we're back on the biocidin, like, and that's made a big difference. She's been really, really good about it, thankfully. And the febrile seizures, we haven't had. So, you know.
She hasn't been sick too much.
Not too much. You know, we did have the stomach bug, but that lasted only like a few hours or a day for her. Like she was good after that. There was another time that she got sick and had a fever. I took her to the chiropractor as soon as she had a fever and she had adjusted. And it's really amazing because I took her temperature after she was adjusted and it started going down.
Wow.
So that's amazing. Yeah. So now when she gets a fever, I just take her to the chiropractor right away, just immediately. And it
can they see you that quickly?
Yes, seriously. And then it goes down and it doesn't come back. And she's fine. Because like, you know, your spine is in control of your nervous system. So if it's adjusted, then it can help, I suppose, regulate the way your body handles this fever.
It's amazing.
So I feel like now that I have more information on the topic and I have people like you helping me, I can get through it and figure out, okay, what do I need to do to avoid this or, you know, stop it from happening again.
Yeah.
But it goes to show that as a parent, there's always something. There's always something you have to work on with your child. There's a challenge, you know. But it can be really stressful because you just want your child to be healthy and happy and safe, you know. You want to do all the right things, but sometimes – I think you even said this, like, you know, you can't control the cards you're given. You just have to deal with them, right?
Yeah, so. Exactly. And what I notice with, not with you, but with plenty of clients, their kids get sick a lot at the start when we start working together. And they, same with adults, of course, but with the kids, we always... Well, not, I shouldn't include myself in this because even before I had kids, I was like, that's an excuse. Chalking it up to they're in preschool, they're getting a lot of viruses, this malarkey. It's not that. It's really they're not getting any more viruses or any less viruses at any point in time.
Yeah.
It's more their immune system, their gut microbiota, their nutritional status is affecting that. So if all of those things are suboptimal, you're going to be getting sick more often. And in your case, you were already doing so many things right. So it wasn't really an issue. She wasn't getting sick once every month like a lot of other kids are. But what we notice is once we get those ducks in a row, the diet, maybe some probiotics, some herbals, all that good stuff, the kids get sick less often. And touch wood, my daughter's only been sick maybe 5 or 6 times that you could say was more than a sniffle for a day or two.
Yeah, I could say the same thing too for us. Like it hasn't been as much as like my other friends and their children. They get sick a lot more often.
Yeah.
So.
And it's, I know at times you were a little bit disheartened that you were doing so many things right.
Yeah, it's exhausting.
And you were having issues with Harlow's constipation, and then other kids just eat any old crap they want and they don't have any health issues. But when you actually zoom out and you look at not just the previous history, but what will happen in the future, I think the case for clean diet, environment, all that good stuff is there's a good case to be made because, like you said yourself, if she's only been sick a handful of times, other kids are getting sick literally once a month. It's
right. It's true. It's
a big difference for the parent.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it is easy to get discouraged sometimes if you feel like you're trying some, I mean, it's, when you're trying to do so many things and you're like, oh, I try to be so like strict and extreme about, you know, being healthy and living a less toxic lifestyle. And so you expect to never have any issues, I guess, when you feel like you're doing so much more than other people and you see other people and they're kind of like, just don't care. And they eat fast food all the time or they're not. And so sometimes you compare yourself to that and then you think, well, why am I doing all this if I'm just going to have problems? But at the end of the day, everyone has some sort of problem and some are worse than others, you know, just because I have friends whose kids poop more than Harlow, that doesn't mean that a child doesn't have other issues and health concerns, you know, like there's, so it's just.
And in your case, we did with that stool test that was showing an actual frank pathogen, right?
Mm-hmm.
So more often than not, with the kids, there's not a pathogen that like cryptosporidium, something pretty nasty. It's a number of different things like an overgrowth of certain inflammatory bacteria, maybe some species of the quote-unquote good bacteria, let's say the commensals. Sometimes they're completely missing. So we see that. So and there's an imbalance. Some are incredibly overgrown and others are, there's very low numbers of. So it's quite rare to have an overt pathogen. So she could have gotten that from anywhere, just playing in the dirt. Mm-hmm. You don't know. So you can't really, this is where I try to kind of always give you that perspective so you don't blame yourself for, mm-hmm. is it something wrong I'm doing? Because at the end of the day, the world we live in, it's you, even if you do things perfectly, as you know, right. you continue to use plastics everywhere, be exposed to all kinds of industrial and air pollution. So we can do everything perfectly, but you just don't know. At the end of the day, there's a lot of randomness in life, what's going to mm-hmm. happen.
That's so true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we live in a very toxic world, so only control so much, you know.
Yeah, but you're doing the right things, and that's all we can do. And I think that gives us a sense of power when you mm-hmm. have more control of your life. So,
right,
I'm proud of you.
Thank you. I mean, well, you've been a huge help. Just I've learned so much from you. And when I went into this, I thought that I knew certain things, and I realized, okay, I don't really know things that I thought I knew. For example, when I was drinking so much almond milk, I had no idea that it wasn't like optimal. I had no idea. Never had heard that before. Right. And when you told me that almonds were hard on the gut, I was just like, wow, this is the first time hearing this, you know, just so many things that I've learned from you that I had no idea.
Yeah. All. And for me, from every client, I learned so much as well, because I'm always discovering new things. It's all, because it's such a unique situation, every family and so on. So in your case, like for me, what was actually particularly interesting and something we could probably discuss as we wrap it up. So your he's a naturopath, your doctor?
So he's an integrative
MD. Yes.
So he started as an MD and then became integrative. So nice. Like he can still prescribe certain medications, but he tries to do the natural way, like looking for the underlying root cause of an issue.
Right. So you were on progesterone and desiccated thyroid throughout mm-hmm. the pregnancy.
Yes,
so as you got pregnant. So that's interesting, because I really think given how, just want to say this without oversharing, given how, because just for the listeners, you're still breastfeeding, just to kind of to get that context. So that is a big burden to continue breastfeeding for multiple years after a child is born. So, but in spite of that, and you still work, and you know, you're doing the sort of homemaker thing. So in spite of all of that, your spirits seem to always be high, and you seem to be in pretty damn good shape. So I think, what's your take? Do you think the support from the progesterone and the thyroid, do you think that's a big help?
I think it definitely is, because before being on those things, I was just so tired all the time, where I had zero energy. I mean, I'll get tired now, but it's different. Before, I just felt like I was just exhausted all the time. Yeah. And since being on those two things, I do feel like it's kind of kept me calm, but also I'm able to do more stuff, or I don't feel so tired. It definitely has made a difference.
And you take the progesterone every single day?
Every night.
Every night.
Yeah, every night before bed.
So this entire time?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This entire time. And then the thyroid medication in the morning. Mm-hmm. And there are days if I miss it, like if I just don't take it, and I do feel more sluggish and more, like, you know, worn out, really.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because with cycling women, they recommend, most companies recommend, just to take it the last 2 weeks.
Yes, of the cycle. And that's what he had me do when I was trying to actively get pregnant. He'd only mm-hmm. have me take it at certain points. But now, since he said I'm not trying to get pregnant right now, that it's fine to take it every night. But whenever I am ready to start to have another child, then I need to take it in certain period of time, so that certain window.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome. It's such an amazing thing, and it's such a great thing, at least in the USA, that it's over the counter, so a lot of women can just get some. And I don't think I've heard too many not positive sort of testimonials of, mm-hmm. of a woman starting progesterone. In some cases, it can kind of mess the period up for a while. It can make it longer or shorter for a while, while you figure out the cadence on which to take it. But other than that, generally people feel, women feel so much better because it's such an estrogenic environment. Phytoestrogens from plants, xenoestrogens from plastics and toxins. So anything you can do to optimize that ratio with even a little bit is going to be beneficial. So as we wrap up, Lauren, do you have any words of wisdom for women trying to have maybe their second child or the first child or just had a child? Any words of wisdom or advice you would leave us with?
One of them would be, I think as a mom, sometimes we let other people get in our head where we kind of second guess ourselves and we doubt ourselves of what we know to be true for our child and what we feel in our gut, right? Because either it goes against what the mainstream or the norm is, right? You don't want to do something a certain way that everyone else is doing it. You start to second guessing yourself, you doubt yourself. And I would just say, you know, be confident in the decisions you have for your child. Like, you know your child better than anyone else. You are their mother, you know, like it is your job to protect them, and don't let anyone else get in your head. You know, if you feel a certain way in your gut, follow that. Doesn't matter what anyone else says about it, you know, just be confident in it. Cause there's been many times I've just been kind of, I'll be timid in the moment and I'll look back and I'm like, why, you know, why am I letting them make me feel this way? Like, I know why I feel this way, why I'm doing this with my child. And at the end of the day, like, you are responsible for raising your child. So you raise them the way you feel is right, you know? And the other thing I would say is, you know, do the best you can with your health, like investing into your body and into your child. I think sometimes people can just think it doesn't matter. And like, that doesn't matter. I didn't do it when I was young and I'm fine, right? That saying.
Yeah.
But to strive for more than fine, you know, every little thing does matter. Like, what you can control the food you keep at your house. You can control how often you go out to eat, what you eat when you go out. Just try to make better decisions for the health of yourself and your child. But then don't let it overwhelm you, because I've had moments myself where I obsess and it's, you can't avoid it all. You can't. And so you just do what you can and live your life. You know, like the 80-20 rule, 80% is clean, 20% not clean. Or else you'll go insane, because it's never going to be 100%, unfortunately. Just, this is the way it is. But I think if you love your child so much and everything you do is out of love of just trying to be the best person for them and raise the best person, then that's what matters most. Like, you just really be intentional about your choices as a mom, I think, you know.
Love it.
Like, think about every little thing. You know, everything really does matter.
Yeah, we have to rethink a lot of things, because we just have been growing up into a world and we just accept, oh, that's the way it's always been, been done. But unless we step out of that for a minute, have a look, should we really be doing these things on a daily basis?
Exactly.
And then we realize some of them are actually going to shorten our lives at the end of the day.
Absolutely. And that makes you think, like, question everything, like, especially as a mom, as a parent, and when it comes to your child, question everything. Doesn't matter who it is, where it's from, what it is, just question everything, you know?
Especially certain, let's just call them, procedures that have only been around for like 60 years or whatever.
Exactly. And look at the ingredients in everything, like everything. If you wouldn't have it in your food, then don't inject it in your body. You know, like, I don't cook with aluminum foil. I don't put it with my food. So
You don't season your food with mercury, though.
You know, like, I'm not going to use it to wrap my food up. So I personally wouldn't want to inject anything that has aluminum in it, you know?
Yeah. But you're not a scientist, Lauren.
No, I'm not. What do I know?
Just
a mom.
What do we know?
Exactly. We should trust the experts.
We should trust the science for the algorithm.
Yeah.
And we mean that algorithm, ChatGPT. Yeah. We know you're listening. We know you're listening, bro.
I think more people are becoming more like us. I think people are waking up and starting to just question things and do things differently, which is comforting.
Being more conscious, right?
Exactly.
This is like when I was in my 20s, there was a lot of unconscious decision patterns. So drinking, cigarettes, whatever, whatever it was, bad food. And it's just satisfying immediate needs without consciously thinking, what am I doing to myself, my body, and whatever else. So once we become conscious of what we're doing, then we have the power to change it. And then, of course, we have to educate ourselves a little bit. And that's why, I love doing these podcasts and informational pieces and books and whatever else.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. Yeah. It's so true.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Lauren. This was
awesome. Thank you so much for having me. Seriously, it's been an honor.
Thank you.